So, what terrified you guys as a child? Two things rose to the top for me: death and having to defecate anywhere but home. As far as death goes, my belief around that was it was just this sudden ending of life to be replaced by infinite nothing. I just couldn't take that. And no one could offer me proof to the contrary of my belief. And perhaps what was even worse than this was this idea that death could happen at any moment, and this rising fear that I hadn't even come close to living enough. My father, on the other hand, had lived plenty. He had the stories to prove it. There were no children's books needed in our household for bedtime stories. Dad just riffed from his personal stories, such as rafting down the Mississippi River, Huck Finn style, or being a child trader of junk treasure and fighting off bears as a fire lookout. And he did all this before he was 18. I so wanted to live such stories myself. And as he did a number of these in the Boy Scouts, I thought, all right, I too will sign up to scout. But I had a very different experience. Whereas my dad's troop had a culture of exploration and adventure, my troop was more like lazy ignorance. And so we would car camp. And often in these barren areas, barren from overuse, and we just made them more bare. As the scoutmasters, they had us go out and sweep all the pine needles off the trails and whatnot in the forest. And then the next day, we had to put all those pine needles back because the forest rangers would come by and say, you know, that service project you're doing, it's just contributing to more erosion of the forest floor. So I can't say I was living the stories I sought. Thankfully, though, there was this growing, building pressure within me to make change, to try and live these stories. So many years later, in my 30s, I'm happy to say I finally was living. And at that time, the latest endeavor was to try and create a sustainable homestead with my brother in the middle of the city. We didn't know what we were doing. We were figuring it all out as we went. And occasionally, I would take a break from this by going out on these Boulder Outdoor Survival School expeditions to further push myself. And the great thing about these boss trips, these month-long expeditions, is the first week, the only thing you were allowed to take into the wilderness were the clothes on your back, a knife, a cup, and a couple water purification drops. That's it. And then off you went. So there I found myself. If I wanted to sleep through these cold nights, I had to figure out how to stay warm. If I wanted to eat, I had to figure out how to find or catch food. Then I had to cook it, so I had to figure out how to make fire with friction and sticks, primitive style. It was this amazing experience where we put ourselves into this context where we were highly motivated to try and figure out how to do things in entirely new ways, such as shitting in the forest, okay, and getting yourself clean in a way that not only kept you healthy, but also encouraged far more beneficial life. Now, that last part, I was not expecting, but that was the best part. And so before heading out into the wilderness, our instructor said to us, "All right, this will not be a low-impact camping experience where you try to minimize your negative impact. No, this is a positive impact experience where we will try and maximize the positive impact you have on the world in which you live." So let's start with how you're going to relieve yourself. You need to do this in a way that will not bring sickness to you and the rest of the course and wipe you all out. And you can't hold it, because if you hold it, you will compact your bowels. And then you're going to have to go in there with a hooked finger or a stick to extract all that's been compacted. And we want you to contribute your fertile material to the soil's carbon cycle, not the water cycle. So you've got to go at least 100 yards from any water source, dig a shallow cat hole, and then make your deposit. And then you add other organics, such as whatever you've used to wipe, be it leaves or whatnot, and then other organics like decomposing animal manure to kind of inoculate it all. You mix it up, you bury it, and you add seeds. It's kind of like making a mud pie, but so much better. Because when you come back a year later, everything is just erupting with life. We did the same thing with our fires after the fire went down. We, you know, broke down all the charcoal and everything in the dust, added organics and seed and broadcast it. So our campsites, they didn't become more barren over time. They became more lush. Other outfitters and forest rangers, they couldn't find our campsites because they couldn't see them. And we were learning to see in whole new ways. And for example, in the trees, I was learning to see and harvest food, fiber, shelter and medicine. In the rocks, it was blades and cooking implements. And, oh, rabbit poop, man, that was like infinite wealth. There are so many things you can do with rabbit poop. It's the ultimate fire starter. It's an amazing binder when you're making your own glue and whatnot. I just loved all this. Our fears were fading and vocations were emerging as we would scheme around campfires of how could we bring more of these life-enriching experience and whatnot back to our daily lives. And then the course ended, and we returned to town with a dilemma. Because there in town, the cultural norm was you had to relieve yourself in these flush toilets full of water, drinking water, which we found. So we couldn't do it, because if we were to crap in this drinking water, we would instantly convert that into this toxic sewage. This went against everything we learned out in the bush. So our sphincters just froze up. Couldn't do it. So instead, we all ran back off into the bush and deposited our fertility and, you know, added to life out there. And then when I got back home, I was talking it over with my brother and my neighbor and Outward Bound instructor, Kevin. And we thought, you know, how can we recreate this connection with the wilderness and contribute to it as we felt out there? So Kevin, he committed to planting all his feces within cat holes throughout his yard. And it was great for a little while, but then a problem arose because he had this heroic output. And the rate of decomposition was just too slow. So he hit upon critical mass. So we had to figure out some alternative for dealing with all this in the urban context. So we started researching and building and using about a dozen different waterless compost toilet systems, and which they dramatically increased the speed of decomposition from shit to soil in a very safe way. And the masters of all this were David and Pearl, because they took things far further than anyone else. And I remember enjoying this amazing home-cooked meal with them. It was so delicious. And I'm eating the greens and whatnot, and I said, "Matt, did you guys grow these greens?" And they said, "Oh, yeah, we grew everything you're eating in 100% on-site composted humanure." That's pushing the envelope. That proximity of that humanure to the food that they grew and I was now eating, that took it to another level. So I immediately just felt this wave coming over me of just disgust, awe, and a desire to know more. So they explained the whole system, and you just showed the whole thing and went real thorough. And they said, you know, this is how we ensure that everything is thoroughly composted in a very safe way before we plant anything. And I loved all that. And I said, okay, I checked in with myself. Am I feeling sick? No. In fact, I'm feeling really good. Well, we started eating some more. So we, you know, dove in. And my appetite was just so risen, and I just couldn't get enough. And the only thing that slowed me down was this realization that this was the most intimate meal I had ever shared with anyone. I mean, not only was the food grown and prepared by my hosts, but it was grown in soil that literally just months before had been them. loved it. So all this, these experiences with composting and regeneration, they had just been transforming my experience with both shit and death. And fear had faded away and been replaced by love, because I so loved transforming these wastes into life again. And it got me thinking about shit, and, you know, what is shit? You know, some people say it's just dead food. And that got me thinking about dead bodies. I thought, you know, maybe I could likewise help the dead transform themselves back into life. So I broke the rules. And I took a dead chicken and I put it in the compost bin. And it transformed into very fertile soil from which I grew the most delicious tomatoes I've ever eaten. Finally, I had it. Proof that there is life after death. And when my father died, we cremated his body as he requested. And we did it simple and cheap because he had taught us to be thrifty. So there's no elaborate casket, just a cardboard box. And we had the final viewing, not in the showroom, but in the furnace room of the mortuary. And we said our final goodbyes. And as my brother and I were standing there in silence, the mortician looked to us and asked if either of us wanted to start the furnace. I did. So the furnace door was open. Dad was rolled in, and the door shut. I then pressed the button. And there was a tremendous roar and vibration as huge amounts of gas surged into the furnace and ignited into a cyclone of fire, which went on for hours until Dad's body was nothing more than ash, fragments of bone, and dental work. So I then looked at the mortician. I said, "How often are you doing this?" And he said, 24/7. It never stops. The freezer, it's full. Always full. We can't keep up. It's the same with all the crematoriums. If there's ever a lull, we take bodies from the others just to help them out. So we then walked outside, and I looked up at the chimneys to see Dad's vapors and the vapors of others being released. And I thought of all the crematoriums all over the world, all going full tilt all the time, sucking up vast amounts of energy, spewing huge amounts of carbon and other emissions nonstop. I thought, man, the way we're processing the dead, we're killing the living. And I thought back to that chicken I'd composted, which led me to Georgia and a green burial site. There, they purposely plant the dead to help regenerate a mixed hardwood forest that had been lost to clear cutting and overgrazing. And there, they don't allow any bodies that have been embalmed with formaldehyde or other toxic fluids. Because in all cemeteries, those just leach out of the bodies and contaminate the groundwater. Turns out that if a family doesn't have to go through such embalming, they save thousands of dollars. And no fancy caskets are allowed either, saving more money, but also saving hardwood trees that would otherwise be cut down to make those caskets. There's no engraved tombstones allowed, just a GPS field stone. And when the burial is over, the families broadcast wildflower seed and restoration seed mix, and life grows. And it was such a different experience for me walking through this compared to a conventional, you know, lawn-covered cemetery, which I found so manicured, sterile, and lifeless. Whereas here, in this place, there was no sound of lawnmowers. All I heard was infinite birdsong, the incredible diversity of birds flying all about and the call of other wildlife darting around. And the vegetation was so diverse. And as I walked from the newer burials to the older burial sites and deeper into the regenerating forest, things just got more rich, more full of life, more beautiful and dense. And then I thought of my friend and mentor, Tim. Because Tim has written into his will that he is to be planted in the fetal position, butt up, with acorns placed around and within his ass. Because it is his intent that a tree and other life will grow from him so that loved ones and unknown ones can at some point in the future sit under the shade and the beauty of that life. Perhaps even harvest the acorn bounty and hopefully be inspired to likewise partner with life cycles. Naturally, it was now time for me to write my will.